Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Praishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschapti Deshatarne. Please don't put Bhagavad Gita on your leg. So you're going to translate, is it?
Yes.
But you have to do it while I'm talking too. I don't know how you're going to do it, but others do it. I couldn't do it myself, I don't think. I never tried to do that. But somehow or other they do it. You're hearing one thing and speaking something else and translating. It seems to me like some amazing feat, but somehow or other devotees do it. Yeah, so please sit near the back and just announce whoever wants to hear in Tamil should sit near you. That means almost everyone here. So, we're going to read from Gita, chapter 5, text 11. Would be good if it was opened at the same page. Well, maybe it was before. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 5, text 11. Did we get it written? No. Uh-huh. All right. So, the modern system is look in your phone. You don't have it in your phone? Really? You didn't bring a phone? Oh, you can't do things like that then. Oh, okay then. Well, there's not enough books for everyone to see it, so... Yeah, it's not enough. I don't think so. So, in that case, I'll just chant it myself. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalayarindriyayarapi yogina karma kuravanti sangam tyaktvatma shuddhaye. Translation. The yogis, abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. Chapter 5, text 11. Did you find it?
Yes.
Okay. So, you can... Yeah. Purport. Yeah. You have to read... Did you read the translation? You read it already? Okay. I'll go ahead and read the purport. Yeah, please come. When one acts in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the senses of Krishna, any action, whether of the body, mind, intelligence, or even the senses, is purified of material contamination. There are no material reactions resulting from the activities of a Krishna conscious person. Therefore, purified activities, which are generally called sadachar, can be easily performed by acting in Krishna consciousness. Sri Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, describes this as follows. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasagira nikhilasvapyavastasu jivan mukta sauchate. A person acting in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, in the service of Krishna, with his body, mind, intelligence, and words, is a liberated person even within the material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. It's the end of that translation. Srila Prabhupada's purport continues as follows. He has no false ego, for he does not believe that he is this material body or that he possesses the body. He knows that he is not this body and that this body does not belong to him. He himself belongs to Krishna, and the body too belongs to Krishna. When he applies everything produced of the body, mind, intelligence, words, life, wealth, etc., whatever he may have within his possession to Krishna's service, he is at once dovetailed with Krishna. He is one with Krishna and is devoid of the false ego that leads one to believe that he is the body, etc. This is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. Ayena manasa buddhya kevalaya indriyairapi yogina karma kuravanti sangam tyakvatma shuddhaye. The yogi is abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. As usual, in his translations, Srila Prabhupada relates everything to Krishna consciousness. It could be said that, well, a yogi means a karma yogi, a jnana yogi, a hatha yogi, a raja yogi, a bhakti yogi. That's true. But Srila Prabhupada always brings it to the point that ultimately yoga means Krishna consciousness. So the point here is that one should always act for purification. Kuravanti, they act, which includes for the benefit of others. Arjuna, he didn't want to fight. He thought that would be for the benefit of others. If he didn't fight. But Krishna has distinguished between what is material and what is spiritual. And on the spiritual platform, what may seem to be, or what is right actually, might not fit with what we think is right in material terms. It's a different perspective. To give a rough example, what we think is true in science, boys are studying science, is it? Maybe a little young for that. They study science, in which you learn about atoms and molecules and various forces, subatomic particles. I don't know if they get that far in school, down to subatomic particles. But if you go further, then you find, well, it's not really that at all. It's all waves. It's another perspective. Quantum physics, which I really don't know much about, but we do hear things about. And quantum physicists, they may also say, we don't know much about it. If they've studied it very deeply, they may say, we don't know much about it. That's true of any subject, but particularly, it doesn't seem to make any sense, many things about it. A particle, is it here? No, it's there. It's somewhere in between. Can't say for sure. Doesn't seem to make sense. So, the same reality, or what seems to be reality, viewed through the eyes of classical Newtonian physics, doesn't work if we see through quantum physics, relativity theory, and so on. So there are different perspectives And they're both valid, but they have their particular use in various circumstances. We have to act in terms of the reality that we perceive to a large extent in this material world. But then Krishna, he's bringing us to a different level of perception, that we can perceive the world through Krishna's eyes. Pashanti Jnana Chakshusha, Krishna says here in Bhagavad Gita. Udkramantam stitam vapi bhunjanam vagunan vitam vimurha nanu pashanti pashanti Jnana Chakshusha. People who are very big fools don't see how a living being gives up the body and accepts another body. How this is going, how he's enjoying within the three modes of material nature. But one who has got the eye of knowledge, which means Shastric knowledge, he can see and he can understand. And then he can understand that this material world is not a place of our enjoyment. It doesn't seem to be to make sense. Just like if we see in a more superficial way, then Newtonian physics seems to make sense. Everything, we can explain everything. We can explain everything in existence. Then we come to quantum physics. What is it? It's beyond reason or logic or common sense. So if we see the world, it seems, well, it's something meant for my enjoyment. I have a mind and a body and senses, and there are things out there which I can enjoy. But then we hear from Krishna, who tells us, dukhalayam ashashvatam. This material world is miserable. And even if you think, well, anyway, I'll enjoy it, but you can't. Only for a very short time, because everything here in this world is temporary. So it gives us a different perspective on reality. Then why are we suffering? Yeah, actually it's a place of suffering. Everyone should see, but people don't see. Because there's so much in the consciousness of trying to enjoy this world. Why don't they see? Because they don't see in the way that Krishna sees, in the way that Krishna teaches us to see. Then we can understand this world is miserable. Well, we don't want to be miserable, so then what do we have to do to get out of here and here? In this verse, Krishna gives one clue. There are many instructions in Bhagavad Gita about how we can be free from this miserable situation. Here, Krishna states that the yogis act with their bodies, the mind, the intelligence, and the senses. They act, they do karma. They're yogis, but they do karma. Here in Bhagavad Gita, the yoga is, well, we have buddhi yoga, karma yoga, bhakti yoga. But especially in these early chapters, the word yoga and yogi is used interchangeably with karma and karmi. So yoga, Krishna describes, is action in Krishna consciousness, which is the title that Srila Prabhupada has given to this chapter. Karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. And he sums that all up At the end of this chapter, the beginning of the next chapter, in which he defines who is a sannyasi and who is a yogi. Anashrita karma palam karyam karma karoti yaha sa sannyasi cha yogi cha naniragnya na chakriyaha. Who is a sannyasi? Who is a yogi? Krishna explains. It's not someone who gives up work, or it's not someone who gives up his duties, giving the example of a sannyasi who gives up fire in every Vedic home or in the Varnashram system, and especially the three higher varnas, especially the brahmanas and kshatriyas and vaishyas, they have to keep fire in the home. Akhandadeep, you've all heard that term, the undying flame. That is required for cooking, but even more importantly, for fire sacrifices. In every home there should be a fire sacrifice. That's not very possible in the modern age. In the modern age, there's the sacrifice, the yajna of chanting the holy names of Krishna. Sarva yajna hoite Krishna nama yajna sha, as stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the best among all yajnas is the Krishna nama yajna, chanting the names of Krishna. So that should go on in every household. Anyway, abandoning everything, becoming a sannyasi or a yogi. Krishna says the real yogi is not one who tries to abandon everything and give up work, but one who works as he is obligated. Anashrita karma phalam, without desiring or thinking that my work, what I do, the fruits that I produce, that is for me, or that is something that will sustain me. So it's a very different understanding to that of the conventional. So you might think, well, what's this got to do with me? If I'm a householder and living at home and I'm not a yogi? Krishna's talking about yogis. But I'm not a yogi, I'm a grihastha. But then Krishna told Arjuna, yogi bhav Arjuna, tasmat yogi bhav Arjuna, you be a yogi. You be a karma yogi, Krishna told Arjuna. And then ultimately after that, tasmat yogi bhav Arjuna, tapasvi bhyodiko yogi. Yoga, it's better than being a tapasvi or a worker or jnane bhyo diko mataha. Better than being a jnani is to be a yogi. And who's the best yogi? Yogi nama api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamomata. Who's always connected with me? Krishna says. Who has taken me into the... who has entered very deeply into... or accepted me fully, deeply within his heart and worships me with great faith. He is the best yogi, Krishna says. So, actually everyone's supposed to be a yogi. Human life is meant for God-realization, self-realization, we can say, of the highest level of which is God-realization. So everyone's meant for that. Everyone's supposed to be a yogi, maybe in family life, like Arjuna. And so many of the great devotees we find in Bhagavatam, throughout Shastra, there are householders. Srila Prabhupada gives the example from the 12 Mahajans who are listed by one of them, Yamaraj himself. They're listed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu. Swayambhu means Brahma, he's a householder. Narada is a brahmachari. Shambhu, he's a grihastha. Then what's the next? Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara. Well, they're definitely brahmacharis. Kapila, he's also in the brahmachari. Manu, he's married. Prahlada, married, even though he says that maitun adi griha medi sukham hi tucham, the enjoyment of beginning with sexual enjoyment that defines family life, that is insignificant. But he himself also, it means he's not enjoying the material world type of grihastha. Prahlada, Janaka is definitely, the very name suggests that he's a grihastha. Because it means who gives birth to, it means father. And Bhishma, yeah, well, he lived in society, but he was didn't marry. So he's a brahmachari. Anyway, the point is that so many grihasthas, they're also great devotees. That means they're acting according to this principle. They're acting in Krishna. Oh, and then Balir Vyasa. Bali is Bali Maharaj. Vyasaki is Shukdev. He's a committed brahmachari. And Vayam means we, means Yamaraj. He's a grihastha. So there are so many great devotees, grihasthas also, but they live according to this principle. That whatever they do, manasa deho geho jo kichu mor apilun tuapade nandakisho, whatever they do, it's having already submitted everything, their mind, their body, their home, whatever anyone thinks is mine, they have offered to the lotus feet of Nanda Kishore, to Krishna. So, everyone is supposed to be a yogi. When we think of a yogi, we think of someone with a very emaciated body and long hair performing severe austerities. That's a caricature. But caricature, what's the word for that? Pratik, I guess you'd say in Hindi. I know what you're saying. Oh, that's the general idea that people think. But everyone in human life is supposed to be a yogi. Whatever status of life they're in. Because everyone is supposed to be Krishna conscious. Now I may say, well, okay, all right, we're grihasthas, but we have to make some concessions to materialistic life, which is a fact. Grihastha life means there are so many social duties. But at the same time, the life of a grihastha devotee is very different from that of a materialistic sense enjoyer. And may often be seen as antisocial. We often get questions like this from grihastha devotees. Well, I have to go to a wedding and then people expect me to eat. I can't refuse to go to the wedding, but if I don't eat the food there, it seems very bad. What can you do? We are strictly warned not to eat food offered by materialistic people. So that's just one example. What to speak of having to mix with materialistic people day in, day out. Spending more time with materialistic people than with devotees, because our job necessitates that. Therefore we recommend, as far as possible, devotees may come and join our rural communities where everyone can live together as devotees and be devotees and perform devotional activities and not lead a double life. If we hear someone leading a double life, it sounds very bad. What it usually means is that they're doing one thing, but the people see them in one way, but they're doing something else which people don't know about. It often means that they're having some illicit sexual affair on the side. I said once, as a joke, to one of my God brothers, Dhanadaswami, he said, you're leading a... I saw him in Govardhan, where he likes to spend time. I said to him once, you're leading a double life, and he looked shocked. Like he's accusing me of having some illicit sexual activity. I said, one life in Govardhan, another in New York. Then he laughed. Because Govardhan is so different to New York. Of course, he has the same activities and motivation, which is to be Krishna conscious. But such a different place. I think anyone from Govardhan couldn't imagine what it's like in New York. And probably in New York they couldn't imagine what it's like in Govardhan either. So it can be a dilemma for householders, but we always have to remember kayena manasa buddhya kevalaya indriyairapi yoginam karma kurvanti tyaktva. What is it? What's the last line? Sangam tyaktva atma shuddhiye. They give up material attachments and act with body, mind and words and the senses only for the sake of purification. Or to put it in a more directly devotional context, anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjanam. The devotee acts in such a way that everything he does is, that's his vow, I'll do whatever is favorable for my advancement in devotional life and reject everything which is not favorable. And again, in family life, especially in the modern world in which the society around us is not devotional at all, it's very materialistic. Even in a small town in Tamil Nadu, like Pollachi, still, it's not as grossly and overtly materialistic as Bangalore. And even Chennai is not as grossly and overtly materialistic as Bangalore. But everyone's living for what? Not for serving Krishna. And because of lack of spiritual education, people are just living for eating, sleeping, mating and defending. They don't even think about it. But just they're going on like that, and the purpose of life they don't even think about. But basically they're thinking how to earn some money and eat and sleep and live in a house and maintain their prestige and so on. And then have a phone and watch TV and so on. Just materialistic, that's all. So, we may think in devotional life, we may even hear from within our ISKCON circle, we may hear the words, what's the harm? There's no real, just like it's become very popular now in ISKCON, especially in North India, I would think, to play holy. You don't have this here in South India, especially not in Tamil Nadu. In Telugu area they have that? In Hyderabad they would, because there's such a strong influence of North Indian culture. But then if you go outside to, say, for instance, Rayalaseema, I don't think they do that. In Hyderabad you have, because there's so many Sindhis and this and that there. The North Indian culture is mixed up. It's a big cosmopolitan city. But it's very much in North India, on Holi, it's the day Dol Purnima, Gaur Purnima, and in some places it's not just on one day, just like in Varshana, they go on for days and days. And that's part of Brajamandal, that's the place of Radharani's residence. So it's throwing colors on each other, either powders or with a, what do they call that, pichkari, something like that. Now you know what I'm talking about. No? No, never heard of it. With a hose pipe they do it nowadays? They spray colors on each other, and it's fun. But we in our Gauriya Sampradaya, at least the line coming through Bhaktisthan Sasari, we don't do that. One reason is because we're worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on that day. We're waiting for him to arrive. He arrives just with the moonrise, so we're just waiting for him to come. And another reason, it's, of course, Krishna does this. There are descriptions in the Bhagavatam. Krishna plays with his queens like that in Dwaraka. But it's fun, but it's not directly Krishna conscious. It's something for our own enjoyment. It's a social event for our own pleasure. People enjoy it. And you can chant Hare Krishna while you're doing it, but in and of itself, it's fun for us. It's not directly for Krishna. Some devotees have suggested you can throw on the deity some color, but that also, I don't see it's done in our, even in Bengal, in Bangladesh, they don't even have that holy there in East Bengal. I think there's, previously that might not have been there in West Bengal also. They may have imported that also. In your Udupi area? No, it's not part of South Indian culture at all. Yeah, I never saw it in Bangladesh also. So I think in West Bengal it may have come from Hindi movies and this and that, although it's very strong in West Bengal. You don't know, you don't know West Bengal. I know it more than you do, even though you're a Bengali. By body. Shileti, to be more precise. So it's become very popular in ISKCON, and even in the West, devotees started introducing it, and it's been taken up in a big way by young people, and it's gone outside of ISKCON now because people have recognized, oh, it's some, we can make money with this, and they hold festivals, and it's completely lost from any devotional context. It started doing it in the West, in America, with the idea, then many people will like to come to the temple, and they do, they love it. Young people, they play some music. You can imagine what kind of music. Don't imagine. And you don't have to imagine, because you hear it all the time here in India also, the weddings and this and that. You hear this Western, horrible, I don't know why they even call it music. And it's just fun, they love it. They all dress in white cloth and they spray each other with colors. Young boys and what we'd call boys in India, young men and women. And so now in India also it's become, in our ISKCON temples, in many they do this, and many young people like to come. And I guess they give them some prasadam and this, and maybe play some, have a little kirtan or something here and there. But people are coming for sense gratification, not for Krishna consciousness. That may be true to some extent, even in our festivals, but just like we have dramas and kirtan, but then it's people come, just like, speaking of America, there's, what's his name, Madhu Mahaprabhu, all his life he's been doing festivals all over America, and Indrajumna Swami, very famous, Tribhuvanath Swami previously, doing festivals, and it's presented, it's Krishna consciousness presented in a very attractive way. They'll have some dance and dramas, but it'll be drama with a Krishna conscious theme. And they'll have a tent with putting these gopi dots. That's something which devotees in the West invented. It's a nice thing. They put little drops of tilak on girls' faces. But it's all very clearly centered around Krishna and Krishna consciousness. People have a Krishna conscious experience, but when you have young boys and girls throwing colors on each other and dancing madly, it may be at a Krishna temple, but how does it relate to Krishna? There's a problem there. So you may say, what's the harm? The harm is, it's not sangam tyakvatma shuddhaye. It's not, there's no clear connection with becoming detached from this material world and purification. It's non-devotional. You may say, well, Krishna does it. Yeah, but there's so many things that Krishna does. But that doesn't mean we should imitate. We should know what to follow and what to imitate. Krishna does it for His pleasure. He's the supreme enjoyer. We have to act in a different role. Maybe when you go back to Godhead, you'll be preparing what's the word in English? Syringe. That's a little thing. What? Water pistol. That's something else. There is a word. I just can't remember it now in English. This big one that you use for that. Anyway, whatever it is. No. There's some word. I just can't remember it now. The English word for this thing. Jala Jantra, it's called in Bengali, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You'll see. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I just can't remember. It'll come now. It'll come after some time. So they spray each other with this... So we might have the fortune to prepare that for Krishna to use. Sprinkler, not really, no. Sprinkler is something else. It's all right. You don't know it, and I've forgotten it. The more you try to remember, you can't remember. It's a funny thing of the human psychology. When you try to remember something, you can't remember. You stop trying to remember, and then it comes automatically. Isn't it? Funny thing. So, I can't stop trying to think what it is. It doesn't really matter. You know what I'm talking about. And even if I say the word, it wouldn't make any difference. So, or we might, if we get up to the level of being one of Krishna's queens, that's pretty high up. We might be able to spray directly on Krishna. But here in this world, and actually in the spiritual world also, we always have to think, am I doing this for pleasing Krishna? Will this please Krishna? Will it help me to advance further? Will it help others to advance in Krishna consciousness? Kurvanti, they act. The yogis act. It's not just for themselves. For the benefit of others. Now, if we say that, on one hand, we may say that, yeah, well, everyone can attain perfection as a grihastha. We often hear that, right? And it's definitely Krishna conscious philosophy that one can achieve all perfection as a grihastha. That's unlike the Mayavadis who say that. Well, nowadays they don't, but the real Mayavadis... Shankaracharya, he made people into sannyasis. You want to have spiritual perfection, you've got to be a sannyasi. And in India also, many people think, up to the present day, if you've got to be spiritually perfect, you have to leave samsara. Samsara means the cycle of birth and death, and it also means married life. So the two things are equated so closely. But Krishna conscious understanding is that in any situation one may become fully perfect. So one can become fully perfect as a Krishna conscious grihastha. Fully perfect means always thinking of Krishna, doing everything for Krishna's pleasure, not neglecting one's family duties, but keeping those family duties circumscribed within, that means limited, within the field of what can be favorable to Krishna, serving Krishna. And even some things we may have to do which might not seem very favorable, but we have to minimize those things. There may be even in brahmachari or sannyas life, so that just by being in this world, especially in this modern age, sometimes one has to do things which are not directly favorable to Krishna consciousness. One may have to do that. Just like, for instance, I may have to travel to different countries for preaching, and I may have to dress, for entering some countries, I might have to dress in secular dress and pretend that I'm not a sannyasi, not a devotee of Krishna. So in and of itself, that's not very favorable for cultivating Krishna consciousness. A sannyasi especially should always be dressed as a sannyasi, but sometimes may have to do some things or even have some dishonesty in presenting oneself as a non-devotee so that one can get past the immigration officials and enter the country and go on with one's preaching activities. But in grihastha life there are many, it's many such things. Much of the time, many of our grihastha devotees, they don't even let their colleagues at work know that they are devotees, or if they are, they downplay it, they keep it. They don't promote it very much, because it's not very socially accepted, and they may find it easier to do so. But nevertheless, despite all these impediments, one can attain perfection as a grihastha. So that's true. But on the other hand, one has to do the required work to attain that perfection. It's not just that by being a grihastha or being anything, one automatically attains perfection. One has to, whatever status of life one is in, one has to take the essence of these instructions, just like this, kayena manasa buddhya kevalaya indriyarpi yoginam karma kuravanti tyaktva sangatma shuddhaye. One has to actually think, how am I dedicating my mind, body, words and senses fully giving up material attachments? One has to do that. So if one is not willing to do what is required to attain perfection, then don't expect to attain perfection. One has to be willing, enthusiastic and determined to do whatever is required to attain perfection. Otherwise it's a kind of hypocrisy. Yeah, I'm a grihastha, and grihasthas can attain all perfection. Yeah, but you still have to follow the basic principles of becoming detached from this material world, even though one has responsibilities within this material world, and that are not to be given up, but one has to develop the mentality of padmapatram evambhasa, just like the leaf of a lotus is on the water, but not attached to the water. So in the same way, living in this world, but not attached to it. One has to cultivate that consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not cheap. It requires a complete change of heart. When I was in Bengal, so many times I used to hear people say, because it's a very strong Vaishnav culture there, especially in East Bengal, but the pure devotional service had not been widely preached there for several generations. So there are many mixed up ideas, or what we broadly call sahajya, or those who take things very cheaply. So we'd often hear, as we're traveling around preaching there, people say, Guru Kripa Hi Kevalam. The Guru's mercy is all in all. And we hear that in our modern ISKCON also, similar thing, special mercy. We get some special mercy. Well, mercy is always special. It's not such a cheap commodity that it's just floating around, that anyone can pick it up and take it. It's something which is bestowed upon us. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Mahavaranya avatar, most merciful avatar. But the special mercy is for people who are deeply in Maya, like Jagai and Madhai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lifted that. That was his special mercy on them. Mercy means he lifted them up from the sinful life. There are people who knew nothing about Krishna consciousness. In the present age, people who know nothing about it, who are not inclined to it, if they get the mercy of Krishna and his devotees, then they can come into Krishna consciousness. So mercy is to help people to come into Krishna consciousness and to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. We can't advance without that mercy. That's a fact. But it's not a substitute for our own personal endeavor. We also we have to take the mercy and apply it in our lives. Just like to give a hungry man some food, that is mercy, but then he has to eat it. He has to make the effort of eating it. The mercy is to give him food, but then he has to make that much effort to put it into his mouth and chew it and swallow it. You might think, well, that's obvious, isn't it? Well, yeah. And you might think that someone who's starving, they'd be very happy to get that food, and automatically they'd eat it. But in Krishna consciousness, we don't always see that people, they're not convinced that I need the mercy of Guru and Krishna so that I can become free of material attachments and become fully surrendered to Krishna. So, getting back to this, what's the harm in all these things? Well, they're non-devotional. Things like eating food cooked by non-devotees because it's convenient, or we can't be bothered to cook, or we like it. It's a pleasure for my tongue. There are so many things. We may think, well, everyone at work is talking about this movie. They've all been to see it. They all think it's something very interesting. And I'm left out. Okay, I'll go and see it. What's the harm? Then I can fit in with the other people better, and they won't think I'm so strange. What's the harm? It's non-devotional. It blocks the mercy. Anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam. We have to act doing everything that is favorable for devotional service and giving up that which is not favorable. So, to say what's the harm in activities that might not seem very bad, just like playing holy and throwing colors on each other. It's not like going out and wringing chickens' necks and eating meat. It's not such a grossly sinful activity. And it's fun. What's the harm? The harm is that it creates... Well, first start, it's not serving Krishna, so we're wasting our time. And it creates within our heart, or nurtures within our heart, that desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So that's very serious. If we have to dedicate so much to get free from so many lifetimes of sinful activities and desires, we have to make so much effort to be free from that so that we can enter the realm of pure devotional service. We definitely need a lot of mercy to get free from all of that, but then we have to make our own effort also. Otherwise, it might sound very devotional to preach, oh, you get special mercy. Just get some special mercy. But then, if that is preached as if it's a substitute for ourselves being very serious in Krishna consciousness, it actually becomes anti-devotional to preach like that. It's not devotional because it gives a wrong understanding of Krishna consciousness, which hinders our advancement. It's almost like imitating Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who would transform people's lives just by seeing him or hearing about him. But then, just like the case of Jagai and Madhai, he transformed the lives of very simple people. Then he told them, don't sin again. He didn't just say, okay, now you got the special mercy, now you can go back to being a drunkard. He didn't say that. Or he didn't even say that you have to just be good now. Just be a normal person. No, they're expected to take up devotional service, chanting, hearing, and everything. So, the concept of mercy has to be properly understood. It's quite acceptable to admit that I'm very weak. I have to try in devotional service. I'm doing what I can, but I'm weak and I need mercy to advance. That it's quite acceptable to say that. If one doesn't just... That's another kind of hypocrisy to say, well, I'm very weak, therefore I don't follow all the things that I'm expected to follow. It's another kind of cheating. I can cite one example of a Bengali Babaji who I met in Vrindavan some years ago at the place of Prabodhananda Saraswati, just off the Parikrama Marga. So then he was just talking with a few Bengalis, Babajis who are living there, and one of them pulls out some tobacco and, you know what they do, they do it like this and then pop it in their mouth. And I said to him, come on, well, you're not supposed to take tobacco. And he laughed and said, Sangha dosh, it's the fault of bad associate. In other words, he didn't take it seriously at all. The fact that he knew he's not, the devotees are not supposed to take tobacco, but probably all the Babajis there were taking. Otherwise they would have thrown him out. If they were serious. So they know it's wrong, but it's janiya shunya bisha kainu, janbuj kainu. They know that it's wrong, but they're doing wrong anyway. All right, we may slip into something, but we have to make a serious endeavor to come out of our bad habits. Therefore we have rules, no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication, chant minimum 16 rounds a day. For those who are going to be serious, dikkha kale bhakta kare atma samarpan. At the time of initiation, we offer ourselves fully in Krishna's service. That means that we act on this platform, anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam, one has to vow to perform activities which are favorable for advancement in devotional service and to forswear activities which are not. So if one admits, I'm weak, I'm trying, I really need the mercy of Hari, Guru and Vaishnavas to advance, then we can get the mercy, if we're in that mood. But if we think, well, anyway, I'll just do the minimum, maybe a little less, the minimum required and maybe a little less also. And anyway, I'll get by mercy. My guru is very merciful, so it's something like Srila Prabhupada very much criticized the attitude of Christians who said that, who imagine that Jesus Christ died on the cross for their sins, therefore they can go on sinning. Srila Prabhupada, he didn't like this attitude at all. That let Jesus suffer and anyway I'll go on sinning. You may think, I'll just, by Guru's mercy, even though I don't really seriously follow, by His mercy I'll get by. If anyone thinks like that, they didn't actually get the mercy of a bona fide Guru, otherwise they wouldn't even think like that. If one symptom of getting the mercy of a bona fide Guru is that he acts like this, kayena manasa buddhya kevalaya indriya rapi. Yoginam, yogina, sorry, yogina, karma kuravanti sangantyakvatma shuddhaye, that they fully dedicate themselves for the sake of purification, whatever status of life they may be in. So this attitude of thinking, well, I just chant 16 rounds somehow or other and follow the four regulated principles, defining them as broadly as possible, and by that I'll go back to Godhead. That's all you need to do. 16 plus 4 with the dose of heavy dose of mercy, bingo, back to Godhead. We may think like that. We may even preach like that. We tell people, whatever you're doing, just add Krishna. Right? Sometimes we preach like that. Whatever you're doing, just add Krishna. That's all right in the beginning, just to get people to come. But that doesn't mean the whole philosophy and the beginning and the end of spiritual life. You teach the children in the school, 1 + 1 = 2. That's true, but you have to go further. It's not that, all right, now that's everything you understood about mathematics. You have to teach them further. You have to come up. So if we take what's the broadest application of Krishna consciousness and try to make that the blueprint, the guide for our whole spiritual life, then it's not going to work. It's a kind of cheating. Because real spiritual life begins with what? Spiritual life, Srila Prabhupada several times said it, and it's very important understanding. Real spiritual life begins when we're disgusted with the prospect of enjoying this material world. So when we understand very clearly that this material world is not a place for our enjoyment, then our spiritual life really begins. So we may be chanting Hare Krishna, but with this we have to hear also and understand. Otherwise we may be chanting Hare Krishna thinking, well, I'll enjoy this material world also. But then it's like, what is that? Chanting Hare Krishna, bhavamaha davagni nirvapanam. Chanting Hare Krishna extinguishes the blazing fire of material life. So it's like pouring water on the fire of our material desires. But then from the other side, if we pour petrol, so it's not going to work, is it? On one hand, we're pouring water to put the fire out. On the other hand, we're pouring petrol, which stokes it up further. So this verse, Krayena manasa buddhya kevalayar indriyayar api yogina karma kuravanti sangatyakvatna shuddhaye, this all translates into one simple formula which should be the motto of every devotee's life: Krishnarthe kila cheshta. Everything we do is meant simply for Krishna. Krishnarthe, for the sake of Krishna, akila cheshta, all endeavors, simply for the sake of Krishna. So we'll see who has got the mercy of Hari, Guru and the Vaishnavas by their enthusiasm to perform pure devotional service, by their commitment to act in a manner that will help them to become pure devotees, free from all material desires. To give people some idea that just by some mercy they don't have to endeavor very seriously to get free from material desires. To preach like that might encourage people to come to devotional service. Although I don't, it's not going to encourage anyone very serious. But if we preach like that, then it actually hinders our advancement. If we say to devotee, why are you going to the restaurant to eat some food? You should cook at home and offer it to Krishna. Then they think, oh, you don't have faith in the mercy. The misunderstanding of mercy. That we can do whatever we like and we just get, you don't believe in mercy. But it's a misunderstanding, very serious misunderstanding. And it makes us anti-devotional because we equate what is not devotional with what is devotional. Another thing, this thing, your career is your devotional service. Well, that is possible that bhakti, that this arop siddha bhakti, that something can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. If our motive is only to please Krishna and it's ascertained by our guru that this is the best way for us to do so at the present time. But if we think I'll go on with my building my career and getting a big name and everyone will see me and prestige and it's all, we have so many material desires and we're cultivating them and calling it devotional service, then in this way we're conflating pure devotional service with material desires. So in this way there's no clear distinction between what is actually devotional, what is actually for Krishna's pleasure and what isn't. And this way this mixed kind of preaching, it obscures the real path, which is to be anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kama dhyanavritamanukulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktirutama. The real path of devotional service is to be free from all kinds of material desires, even from any desire for material enjoyment, any desire for being liberated from this world without serving Krishna. Everything done favorably for Krishna, that's Krishna consciousness. So the effect of this kind of preaching is that people take the devotional service, but they never get the incentive to take it up very seriously. Because they think it's okay, or maybe even better, to not be very serious. And that it's okay to engage in non-devotional activities, even if they are clearly banned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. For instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we find twice in Chaitanya Charitamrita stating that Bishayer anna kaile malin hoiman, that if one eats food given by non-devotees, by materialistic people, then one's mind becomes dirty, becomes contaminated. So Shuti, Smriti, Purana, Adi, Pancharatra, Vithing, Vina, Aikanta, Kihare, Bhakti, Utpate, Eva, Kalpate. Devotional service which doesn't clearly follow the path enunciated in all the shastras. It's simply a disturbance in the devotional society. Of course, shastra speaks of mercy, but not as a substitute for sadhana, not as a substitute for our own serious endeavor. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please?
He's asking what is the destination of the Krishna Bhakti, and we are asked us, we have certain boundaries, and some say that the sannyasi is the being a sannyasi is the destination of Krishna Bhakti.
I don't exactly understand the question. With the destination?
Yes, by performing Krishna Bhakti, that is the goal. He's asking, what is the
What is our destination? Well, that depends on what we think of at the time of death, is it not? Yeah. Well, more broadly, yang yang vapi smaran bhavam tyajyante kalevaram tantame vaitikanteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. According to what we think of at the time of death, we get our next body. So as a sannyasi, if we think of something material, we get born again. As a grihastha, if we think of Krishna, we go to Krishna. And then again, you said that verse, antakale chamameva smaran mukha kalevaram. What's the next line? Yaprayati samadbhavam tyajyanti. Yati nastatra sangshayaha. Yeah. If one thinks of me only, Krishna says, I'm quitting this body, then he comes to me without doubt. So that's the real thing, to remember Krishna at the time of death. Ante narayana smriti, thinking of Krishna at the time of death. Yaprayati samadbhavam yati nastatra sangshayaha. That's the real thing. Although it's generally considered that in the sannyas ashram, because one has no other duty than to serve Krishna, that it's going to be easier. But it's not necessarily so. Therefore, Kula Shekhar Alva, who is a grihastha, he prayed one of Srila Prabhupada's favorite verses. What is that? Krishna Twadiya Padapankaja Panjarantam Adyayeva Me Vishatu Manasaraja Hangsa Prane Prana Prayana Samaye Kapavata Pittair Kantava Rodanam Vidho Smaranam Kutaste. Says that at the time of, he says, let me die now while I'm fit and healthy, because otherwise I can remember you now, he says, praying to Krishna. Otherwise, at the time of death, the throat becomes choked up and it becomes very difficult to remember Krishna. All the bodily humors, kapha, pitta, vayu, the mucus, bile and air all becomes disordered, so it becomes very difficult. It's also advisable, that's the Varnashram system, that in later life, if one lives to be 50, 60, like this, when the children are older, you can make a plan to become detached from worldly activities and just engage fully in Krishna's service. That's also one way to think. Because at the age of 50, still the body's quite healthy. Nowadays no one's healthy. You know, you're a doctor. In the villages also, huh? In the villages, there the men are just all drinking alcohol. That's all. By 35 there, and they're half dead. Huh? It seems to me in the villages in this area that the men work and they drink all the money, and the women work also, and they use the money to maintain the family. The men are just completely useless. It's what it seems to be like here. They don't contribute anything to the family, hardly. And the women work harder, they get paid less. Women's liberation, that's what we... no. You can understand why they'll go for that, because they'll say, well, men have just lost it. They've lost any culture. You see all the time, don't you? Yeah, in Tamil Nadu, they have one eye on each side with the teardrops coming down. Then you hear the music in the village. They play that. Yeah, it's true, isn't it? And a lot of young people. I always think when I see the pictures of these young people dead, it must have been some car accident or suicide. Motorbike accidents, more than the car. They drink, they go on the motorbike, and then you see the poster on the wall. That's what happens. It's a common thing. We need Krishna consciousness. They're talking about infanticide, yeah. Oh, the infant deaths from diarrhea and this and that, yeah. Everything, it's just, the whole world is horrible. If you read the news, you'll just get sick, actually. It's just so bad, the whole situation. But it's, when I was a kid, it was like that also. It's not that the world's getting better, it's getting worse. Horrible, horrible situation. Anyway, we have to do what we can to spread Krishna consciousness, which is why we're here in Palachi. We're going to have a program this evening. Try and give some boost.
Maybe she has a question.
Hmm. No, Prabhupada did not say that. Prabhupada said if you chant 16 rounds and follow 4 regular principles, you can go back to Godhead. He didn't say you don't have to do anything else. He gave us so many things to follow. That's a little bit added, which is not correct. He also told us we have to rise early in the morning. We have to take only Krishna Prasad. Have you seen that list for initiated devotees? For the first time Prabhupada gave initiation, all devotees should rise early, shouldn't eat food cooked by non-devotees, should avoid association with non-devotees, should always chant the holy names. These are so many other things Prabhupada gave. Notice, yeah. Prabhupada pinned it on the temple door the day after the first initiation. He didn't tell them before initiation. They didn't even know they were supposed to be vegetarian. That comes in that book by Hayagriva, the Hare Krishna explosion. They didn't even know. They thought, oh, we have to stop eating eggs. They didn't even know. And coffee, they didn't know. Prabhupada told them afterward. Later he told them before. So actually there are many things to follow. If we actually chant 16 rounds, we won't want to do all these things anyway. If we're actually praying, O Krishna, O energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. If we're actually chanting, then we won't want to do anything else anyway. All right. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? All right. Then I suppose there's prasad ready for everyone, huh? All right then. Hare Krishna. Your father's still reading so many books. You like to read a lot, huh?
Yes.
All right then. Okay.